Both of our New Testament lessons this morning, the first from the book of Acts, the Acts of the Apostles, and our second lesson from the first epistle of John, both bring back to our attention the theme which we've been exploring through this season of Easter, and that is the idea, the very central and vital importance of the role of witness. I've spoken to you throughout this Easter season on the essential role that witness plays in our understanding of the gospel and of our Christian faith. St. Peter gets up again in Acts and speaks about a need to find a successor in the band of the apostles to replace Judas. And when the lot falls on Matthias, they say, we need another guy who will what? Be with us a witness to the resurrection. And in St. John's first epistle, he speaks about the role of testimony. But in this case, he says, not just the importance for our sake of receiving human testimony, as if, say, in a court hearing, but he says, but divine testimony. God's witness to himself. What does God have to say for himself? So that causes us, that should cause us to sort of see a progression. God bears witness about himself. How? Ultimately through his son, Jesus. Jesus is the ultimate witness to God. What God is like, what God does, what we need to know about God. Christ is the ultimate witness. In fact, the book of Revelation calls him the faithful and true witness. But then who witnesses to Christ? The apostles, right? We believe in one holy Catholic and apostolic church. That's not just a nice pretty word that we get from ancient church stuff. Right? If we are an apostolic church, that means that we do what? We hold to the witness of the apostles, who themselves are the bearers of the witness of Christ as to who God is. So if a witness says something, we have to first reckon with what they're saying, and then secondly, verify, are they a reliable witness? What I want to do this morning is very briefly, I want to recap some of the key points I've said throughout this Easter series since we're coming to the end. Next Sunday is Pentecost. And then secondly, I want to talk about what the witness of the apostles is preserved for us, which is specifically the New Testament. And then I want to say a little bit about how can we verify, how do we know that the witness of the apostles is legitimate, that it is reliable? Okay, so let me recap very briefly. I've said over the last 6 or so weeks that our faith as Christians, our religion, is not a subjective inner emotional experience. It is first and foremost a historical claim. Okay, that's an incredibly important point to make. Not that our faith doesn't have emotions, not that we shouldn't feel good about our faith, or when we come to church and we hear the gospel and we receive the sacrament, we fellowship with the believers. Should that make you feel good? Absolutely. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes people in the church tick you off and you feel bad, but that's life with other sinners. But I'm not saying that we should all feel terrible all the time or that emotions don't matter. What I am saying, what I have been saying, is that when we talk about the essence of our faith, what it means to be a Christian, it's not simply, hey, whatever works for you is fine. Who am I to judge? And whatever works for you is fine. That's great, you know. That's the inner subjective emotional definition of religion, and that doesn't hold water. Because Christianity says that historically something happened, and our faith rests on that event, specifically the resurrection. And it invites those who believe and those who are skeptical to come and see. Judge for yourself. Look at the historical facts. Look at the literary evidence, the internal biblical evidence, the external biblical evidence. Judge for yourself. Come and see. The apostles were always doing what they did in public. It's very important to note. This was not a secret backroom religion. Okay. Secondly, witnesses have to be reckoned with. That's the other thing that I've been trying to say. Is that if somebody comes along and says, I claim this to be true because I was there, we have to say, okay, well, let's deal with that. Let's reckon with it. And if we conclude that your witness is unreliable, well, then we can dismiss your claims. But if the testimony of the witness is credible and reliable, you have to reckon with what they say. This is how our entire justice system works. This is also how our faith ought to work. Okay, that's the recap. Everybody with me so far? Okay, so if you've been trying, you've been here all these Sundays, you should be able to give this sermon. And if this is your first Sunday here, I hope you've learned something new. So now, we come to the case in point. I said at the outset that God's witness and testimony about himself, what he's like, what he has done, who he is manifested in Christ Jesus. And that the witness about who Jesus is, what he has done, who he is, what he is like, comes to us through the apostles and what they claim to have seen on that Easter day. So how does the witness of the apostles come to you and me? How is it preserved for us in the writings of the New Testament? So when we say that we are a Catholic and apostolic church, we intentionally, by default, innately claim to be scriptural people. That we are a church that receives and relies on the witness of the New Testament. So, this all brings us to the question of today is the New Testament reliable? Now, you may have heard a fair bit about this if you listen to a program on television about the Bible in general or the New Testament in particular, or you read in magazine articles or newspaper articles. So there's a lot of talk out there about the New Testament, and you'll hear a lot. And I felt like this was something that needed to be addressed on a Sunday morning. Whether you're a scholar, a theologian or not, who cares? What does matter is that you are going to hear this in some way, shape, or form. And it's my desire that you should at least on some level be familiar with these questions and some of the facts. Right? So let me ask you a question. Most of the time when you see these special features or articles or broadcasts or whatever on the New Testament, chances are you're going to hear from a scholar who is very happy to point out how many errors there are in the New Testament, how many mistakes there are, how badly translated it was. You'll hear the analogy of the telephone game, right? That you say one thing to somebody and then they pass it on and they pass it on, and over time the message gets corrupted, right? And the assumption is that that's exactly how the New Testament was transmitted. Or you'll hear something like this. Well, the Bible's been translated so many times, how can it possibly be reliable? And we have to make a distinction. Are we talking about translation or transmission? A translation is translating the Greek New Testament into English or Swahili. Right? You can translate it in all kinds of different languages, but does that make the base manuscript inaccurate? No. So we have to be clear about our terms. The question is the manuscript, the ancient document that our translations are based on, is that reliable? Has that been preserved and transmitted through time faithfully and represents the original faithfully? That's the real question. And the answer is, Yes, it has. Let me give you an analogy. If you've been to college, it's likely, not a given, but likely that you probably took a class on Western Civ. Or maybe even in high school, you took a class on Western Civ. Western civilization, Western thought, or maybe even a philosophy class. I did my undergrad in chemical engineering, and I still had to take a philosophy class. I actually enjoyed it. Maybe that's why I'm not an engineer anymore. And who do you have to read in a Western Civ or philosophy class? Who's the one guy you have to read him? Plato. Right? In fact, one scholar said that all the history of Western thought is but footnotes to Plato. Now, perhaps a bit of an exaggeration, but the point's well taken. So you go to the bookstore. You go to the student union's bookstore. You go to Barnes & Noble. You go to Amazon. You order yourself a copy of Plato's Republic, and it arrives in the mail, and you're like, aha, I have my copy of Plato's Republic. Now, of course, you don't have the one that Plato himself wrote. Right? If you think you do, talk to me after the service. No, you've got a book that a publisher printed that's based on a translation of a manuscript. The manuscripts that most of the copies of Plato's Republic that we work with come from the 10th century, from late medieval manuscripts. And there's a couple hundred of them, right? Now, when did Plato live and die? He died about the year 347 BC. So the book you get at Barnes & Noble or Amazon is based on a manuscript that postdates Plato by 1,300 years. That's a long time. But you don't see people on news broadcasts saying, you know, how can we be sure that what we have here is what Plato really wrote? Contrast that with the New Testament. The New Testament manuscripts that we use to create the Bibles that you buy today, whether it's the NIV or the ESV or the New Revised Standard, whatever translation it is, are based on, do you know how many manuscripts there are? Some of them are partial and fragmentary, some of them are complete. There's over 20,000 New Testament manuscripts that scholars have available to work with. Between 20 and 25 is actually what scholars today reckon is the total volume of material. The earliest of which, the earliest fragments that we have of the New Testament date to when? About the year 130. That's within decades of the people and the events they chronicle. Now, granted, the earliest full copy of the New Testament, that we have in existence today, is the Codex Sinaiticus, which dates to about the mid-4th century, about the 350, right? And it was discovered in 1859 in a monastery in Sinai. So as time's gone on, we're not getting farther and farther away from the originals. We're actually getting closer to the originals. In fact, the New Testament, from a purely literary, scholarly standpoint, is the most reliable document from the entire ancient world. Most of the manuscripts of classical philosophers that you read today are based on one or two or maybe three manuscripts, all of which are medieval and postdate their events by thousands and thousands of years. So none of the classical study authors can hold a candle to what we have to work with the New Testament. So that this is an incredibly important fact that we need to be aware of. So that's the first thing that I want to say, is that there is a tremendous amount of manuscript evidence that we have available to lend itself to the verifiability and reliability of the New Testament. Now, to be fair, there are a number of scholars that spend time studying these manuscripts and trying to piece together how they were transmitted and copied. They're called text critical scholars. There's one in particular who's made quite a career these days. You may have heard of the name Bart Ehrman if you see a lot of these. He's kind of the hot scholar in text critical circles today. And if you know Time Magazine's going to do a feature on the New Testament, they're probably going to call him. Mainly because he thinks that the entire New Testament is sort of misquoted. So the media tends to like to find scholars that shoot holes in Christianity rather than the ones that actually argue for its verifiability. Why, I don't know, but whatever. That's another topic. And one of the things that you'll hear in these researches is that the New Testament is full of errors. The manuscripts that we have contain lots of errors, to the order of hundreds of thousands of errors. And you know what? That's actually true. I'm done. Let's go get coffee's on me. Right? Wait, hang on a second. What they won't tell you is that 98 or so percent of those mistakes are actually minor spelling and grammar changes. Sometimes it's just a letter. Sometimes it's removing a definite article. Like in the Greek, it refers to the Mary and the Joseph went to Bethlehem. Well, we don't translate it that way. So if a scribe omits the definite article, that's a mistake. Right? So scholars have been able to trace back all of these manuscripts and determine that the reason there are hundreds of thousands of mistakes is because we've got tens of thousands of manuscripts. If you've got 20,000 manuscripts and each one has 10 errors, how many errors is that? 200,000. If you have 5 manuscripts and you have 500 errors, that's a problem, right? In fact, Daniel Wallace, who's a phenomenal New Testament critical scholar, argues that there are less than 1% of the errors in the New Testament have any sort of significant meaning in terms of a word change or something like that, that they can trace back very early, and that changes the meaning of the verse. But none of them change any of the cardinal doctrines of the faith. Right? Like, it's not like we got this word wrong, therefore Jesus is not the Son of God. So you have to sort of tease out the data, because scholars will tell you what they want you to hear to make their point, because they're getting paid by NBC to do this, or whatever. So I want to see that you're aware that there are hard facts, historically verifiable facts, that give us a very solid footing for concluding reasonably that the New Testament is reliable. I could say more, but I'm not, because this is turning into a lecture more than a sermon. But this is important. You will come into contact with this at some point or another. And I want you to be aware of it. Why? Because we need to know that the witness of the apostles, as it's been preserved for us, is reliable. That our faith is not based on, oh, I really hope he is alive. But rather say, you know what? I'm going to depend on the witness of the apostles, and it can be verified. Even if it's talking about some pretty wild supernatural stuff, that it matters that we can know these things. And we should want to begin to know these things, to love the Lord our God with our heart, soul, and mind. And if some of this has piqued your curiosity, call me, email me. I'd be happy to send you more material and talk to you more about this. And if it doesn't float your boat, that's fine too. But as you walk out of here, know that the scriptures that we read, that we study, that we love, and that we trust are reliable. And we can know that. And we can celebrate that. Amen.